JC Corcoran Podcast.
Well, it's May, and that means high school graduation is right around the corner. But we want to make sure that another group of graduates are not forgotten. The people who earn their GED. Here with his own personal story of triumph on the general equivalency diploma is Mr. Jorge Rodriguez.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fallon. When I began to study for the GED, I was a father of four. My back had just gone out, and I lost my job at the post office. Nobody will hire me. Not UPS, not Federal Express, not DHL, not,
What, like Airborne Express?
Airborne Express. I couldn't even get a job delivering pizza. Not at Pizza Hut. Not at Domino's. Little Caesar. Not at,
Papa John's.
No, I didn't apply at Papa John's.
All right, John. We got whatever. Keep going.
So, anyway, I took the GED. And I failed it. I failed science. I failed math. I failed
English.
Yeah, I failed everything.
Okay, yep.
Then I got serious about it and I took it again. But I failed it again. So I sat down and I said to myself, get real. You gotta pass this test.
Yeah.
I got super serious and I studied my head off. And I still failed. I still failed.
But you failed three times?
No, I failed five times. Then I said, I'm gonna take this thing one last time. And my friend Pepe told me that he passed by putting the letter C for every answer.
And then you passed.
No, my friend Pepe was wrong.
Why are you here?
I'm looking for Pepe. Anybody know Pepe? Anybody? Don't worry. Don't worry, Jimmy Fallon. I'm gonna get Pepe. Your ass is grass, and I'm the lawnmower. I'm the Toro. I'm the Honda. I'm the John Deere. I'm the Snapper.
That's enough. Jorge Rodriguez, everyone.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
Thursday, October 14th version of the J.C. Corcoran Podcast here at jcmonline.com. How are you doing, kids? Finally, I can stop hearing the name William Shatner. You have to understand something, that William Shatner has been an insufferable prick, a raging egomaniac his entire life. But I guess you turn 90, you become lovable again for reasons I don't understand. But I guess if you just hang around long enough, people forget what a jackass you've been your entire life. And, it was nice to see him express some actual emotion without it being processed gobbledygook, which is usually comes out of William Shatner's pie hole. Next week, I'm going to be having some things to say about social media. There's a whole thing that's coming next week. I can't really go into it now, but I will tell you this. This is how poisonous the social media thing has become, particularly Facebook. So yesterday, I think it was early afternoon, a story pops up that Howie Mandel was getting his morning coffee or something like that. I guess it was with his family, and he blacked out and he passed out. And they had to put him on some sort of a table or something like that. They took him to the hospital. He's fine. They always say dehydration. I don't understand how that happened. You're a 65-year-old person. You know, and Howie, I would say, looks good for 65. There are some heads that are better shaved. And I think Howie is one of those people. He would look pretty funny with gray hair. Let's put it that way. But the story breaks and it splashes all over social media. And somebody by the name of Kresha Stellman Cano. First of all, what the hell sort of name is Kresha? K-R-E-S-H. Stellman Cano. C-A-N-O. And under the story where people are going, oh, I hope Howie is okay, you know, that sort of stuff. But Kresha Stellman Cano said, I hope it was from the vaccine. Do you have any idea how I always call it antisocial media, but there's a perfect example right there. Can you imagine what's going on in the head of somebody who hears that somebody who's just on TV, Howie Mandel, blacks out in a Starbucks, and the first thing that this woman thinks of is, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, I hope it was from the vaccine. You know, not only historians, but just like me, gonna have trouble someday, 20 years from now, if I'm not already pushing up daisies, trying to explain this to somebody who wasn't around when it was going on. So you figure like grandkids or something like that. And they're maybe 10 years old, they're old enough to understand, you know, the ways of the world. And they're like, okay, so like this pandemic thing, so I don't understand. So people were getting sick, but then they came up with a cure, but then people didn't want the cure because if you got the cure, or I guess we should say the treatment. You get the treatment, you get the shot, the vaccine. Well, then you're expressing a particular political party. And if you don't like that candidate, you shouldn't get the shot. How would you explain this to somebody? And how will the history books tell this story? Because it doesn't make any sense. If you write a book, you can't just say what happened. You have to explain what happened. And how do you explain something that is inexplicable? Take you back to the, late 80s, more like 90s. Yeah, 90s. And we always had somebody coming in to visit. The radio consultants, the people who run the business, or in this particular case, run it into the ground, they have told us nobody likes interviews. Nobody likes that. Just keep playing music. The people who are running radio think that they can compete with satellite radio and streaming services by just telling the people who are on the radio to shut up and just always have music on. The only problem is you can do that. You can do that and say, okay, I will speak no longer than 10 seconds every time I turn on the microphone. But see, there's a major problem that about 18 to 21 minutes of every hour is still going to be commercials. So that's okay. Oh, yes. Yeah, we got to run those commercials. A third of the time that people are listening every hour, it's going to be commercials. But don't you dare turn on the microphone and talk longer than 10 or 15 seconds, because that'll drive listeners away. The commercials? No, those don't make anybody change the station. And so we probably couldn't do half the stuff we used to. We couldn't do that now. But I still remember that back in the 90s, you know, there were always Cardinal wives, St. Louis Cardinals players and their wives involved in charitable things and auctions and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, okay, maybe we couldn't get Jim Edmonds to get up and come into the radio station on a Wednesday morning or something, but we could get his wife because she wants to come on and talk about this charitable thing that she's doing. I'm just speaking hypothetically here. And then you get to tease her about, Jim, let's call Jim right now, wake him up, you know, stuff like that. We just do boneheaded stuff like that. Like I said, now, because of all the consultants getting control of everything and saying, oh, no, you can't do that, most of this stuff wouldn't happen. The reason I'm mentioning all this is because frequently I would get asked about the St. Louis Cardinals' wives, because there have been some good ones. Todd Stottlemyre comes to mind. Jack Clark's first wife comes to mind, although he's married to an absolutely lovely woman now. But I'm just talking about these kinds of women who like come strutting into a room and just, you know, the fish in the aquarium stop swimming for a minute. And as I think of all of the St. Louis Cardinals wives that we had in the studio for one reason or another, the one that sort of jumps out at me as being really the knockout of the world, just the babe of the century as far as Cardinals Nation is concerned, was Ray Lankford's wife, Yolanda. Now, again, we're going back almost 30 years for this. So she was probably in her 20s at the time. And she came walking in and I was like, oh, my God, this is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. She was absolutely gorgeous. Well, that marriage survived some really, really bad publicity back in the 90s when Rocky Arsenault, that sports agent, was having some sort of a party in his condo in the Central West End, and Ray showed up for that. He was specially invited, and there was a box of condoms and some Viagra involved and stuff like that. And, Ray disavowed everything, said, I don't know who you're talking about. I mean, what's he supposed to say? Get caught red-handed, okay? Well, anyhow, over the years, I lost track of Yolanda because we did know each other a little bit, and I just completely lost track. And, Ray stopped playing, and I never knew what happened to the marriage. Well, it turns out that they did end up splitting up eventually. Whether it had anything to do with that event or not, I don't know. All I know is, marriages break up. And I think Ray lives in Orlando, Florida, and Yolanda still lives back in St. Louis. And so yesterday, I'm punching around on the internet, and believe it or not, her image comes up, something on Facebook or something. I'm looking up. I'm like, oh, she is divorced from Ray. And what's she doing? She's marrying Ozzy Smith. Or I don't know, maybe they already are married. Because I think this story was from about 5 months ago. So they might already be married. But anyhow, at least as the case was 5 months ago, engaged to get married. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you a bunch of things. Number one, Ozzy has good taste in women. Number two, Ozzy going to actually settle down? Remember that Channel 4 newswoman, Vicki Newton? Remember her? Black gal, real pretty, and very talented and everything like that. She came into town and apparently met Ozzy like first or second week she was in St. Louis, and they were playing house for a number of months. And then Ozzy sort of went back to being Ozzy, somebody who, shall we say, enjoys playing the field, literally and figuratively, okay? But it also brings up that thing, because I mentioned this to my wife yesterday, and her first response was, oh, like she was disgusted by the idea. And this gets into that whole thing. There's a whole thing that you, an unwritten rule, you cannot date somebody who was in a relationship with somebody that you were close friends with. So if I were single, for example, and I meet up with Brian McKenna's ex-wife, okay, and I say, oh, we're getting along really well, we should go out. In most circles, that's a huge no-no. You just can't, it's got to be hands off of anybody who used to be in a relationship with somebody that you have been friends with. And I'll bet you there's an awful lot of people who are doing it anyhow and probably doing it on the down low because it is so stigmatized. And there have been lots of songs written about this very phenomenon. You go back to the 60s, Take Good Care of My Baby, and songs about, if you find out that you don't really love her, send my baby back to me, and all that sort of stuff. What you don't have is songs like, oh, you think you can date my ex-wife, huh? Well, I'm going to kill you now. But anyhow, why is that a thing? Why is that a thing? All right, else, what do we got here? Oh, the Cubs have hired a new general manager, and he is the kind of guy they say who is more likely to shy away from big free agent deals and instead work from within the system and develop their own players. Translated, the Cubs may not be any good for quite a while now. Speaking of sports, and this is a little bit of a stretch, one of the January 6th rioters has complained to a judge that his ankle bracelet does not allow him to play basketball very well. Nice try. And then another Capitol rioter the other day decides to go into court to represent himself in court. Dumb idea. And accidentally, throughout the process, admits to two new felonies. Lindsey Graham, every once in a while, says something publicly that make people wonder, is Lindsey all there? This is his quote. I'm reading a direct quote now, okay? We had 40,000 Brazilians come through Yuma, Arizona alone, headed for Connecticut, wearing designer clothes and Gucci bags. This is not economic migration anymore. People see an open America, they're taking advantage of us, and it won't be long before a terrorist gets into this crowd. All right, there's a bunch of stuff going on there, Lindsay. Number one, let's start at the very end. Worrying about terrorists getting into the crowd from, where did he say? Brazil. This is not my opinion. I'm just simply stating fact here. If you're looking just at the numbers alone, domestic terrorism is 20 times more dangerous and has been 20 times more dangerous in this country than anything coming in from out of the country. Now, something like 9 of the last 10 or 9 of the biggest last 10 terrorist events were perpetrated by American citizens. Now let's talk about those 40,000 Brazilians coming through Yuma and heading for Connecticut. So let me just understand something. So they're coming like from Central America and they're marching along there and they somehow get into the country at the border and they head for Connecticut and they're wearing designer clothes and carrying Gucci bags. This is in the world of Lindsey Graham. Then you got Herschel Walker. Used to be a great running back of the NFL. Okay. He's a United States Senate candidate in Georgia, where he is a legend. And now he's a legend for canceling a fundraiser after its host was exposed for using a swastika composed of hypodermic needles on her Twitter profile. Whoops. Rainy in St. Louis today throughout the course of the Midwest. But at least it's not cold. Saturday, St. Louis forecast. Sunny with a high of 63, 20-mile-an-hour winds. Saturday night low, 43 degrees above zero. This was the day 36 years ago today. I was at Busch Stadium, daytime game. Cardinals, Los Angeles Dodgers. Everybody is trying to advance in the playoffs. Cardinals and the Dodgers at Busch Stadium. Here's a swing. Ozzie corks one into right. It may go. Go crazy, folks. Go crazy. I was at that game, and I didn't fucking see it because somebody was talking my ear off at the game, and I was trying to get back. I was in one of the private boxes for that game, and I stepped outside, and I was trying to come back in to obviously to watch this momentous thing. We didn't know it was going to happen, but we knew something was going to happen because it was a close game. And somebody's talking my ear off, and I'm trying to get back in, and I hear the crowd react, and I go in, and I see Ozzie going around the bases, but I actually missed the home run itself. Now when I talk to people at baseball games, I never stop walking. Hi, how you doing? But I never stop. Well, that was 36 years ago today. If you were alive 36 years ago today, you remember exactly where you were and what you were doing. It might as well have been the friggin' moon landing. So now you got the Game 5 elimination game, Dodgers and Giants. Tonight, it's all Californians are talking about, you know, other than drought and fire and oil spills and Britney Spears and everything like that. Somebody's going to go home, Giants or the Dodgers. Thursday night football. Tom Brady will be playing without Rob Gronkowski again, and also a couple of offensive guys, and it should not be a close game, but it's going to be closer than it would be under normal circumstances as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers starting to look like, you know, Super Bowl repeat champs. Yesterday was National No Bra Day, something that I'm in favor of. Olivia Wilde is an interesting case. This is somebody who, a marginal actor. I never thought she was like knockout beautiful, but I know a lot of people do. She was married to Jason Sudeikis, who's having a great run right now with his TV show. Like about a year ago, she just ups and leaves. Doesn't just go, you know, to live with her sister. She goes right, move right back in with another dude. For being in this relationship long-term with Jason Sudeikis, she just packs up and leaves and goes straight to another guy. Anyhow, she seems to be an industrious, very, very sharp woman because what she's doing is she sees how Hollywood works. She doesn't want to be an actress. She wants to run the stuff. She wants to run it, you know, produce and direct and do all that stuff herself, which is where the money is and the power and the influence that makes her a very, very smart woman. Well, she is ready to jump into the Free the Nipple movement. Here's the quote yesterday. If we are allowed opportunities to celebrate our body, it has an effect on how we treat one another and how we treat ourselves. I'm not really sure what the hell that even means, but I'm somehow in favor of it. James Gunn from St. Louis, pretty big shot in Hollywood these days, Guardians of the Galaxy. He said he wants to make a Gilligan's Island movie where the castaways get desperate and start killing and eating one another. But the estate of the show's creator won't let it happen. That would be your Sherwood Schwartz. Piers Morgan. Why is Piers Morgan? What? Oh, Rolling Stones have dropped Brown Sugar from their set list because it's about slave owners boinking the female slaves in the middle of the night. It's such an upbeat song, Brown Sugar, and you're like, oh, it's a happy party song. Well, it shows how you can be manipulated by music because it's not a happy song. It's not a happy song at all. But who gives a fuck what Piers Morgan says about anything anymore anyhow? All right, late night tonight, you got Jamie Foxx on with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Kimmel's got Selma Hayek. Colbert's still in reruns till next week. Got Bob Woodward and Robert Costa talking about their book tonight in that repeat if you didn't see it. James Spader on with Seth Meyers. Trevor Noah has John Legend. Owen Wilson supposedly has a three-year-old daughter he's never met, but he does support her financially. A group of Netflix employees are staging a walkout next week over the new Dave Chappelle special. Adele has a new album coming out called 30. It's coming out on November 19th. The trailer for Peter Jackson's three-part Beatles documentary, Get Back, Part 1, hits Disney Plus on November 25th. It is supposed to be absolutely something that's going to knock you on your butt. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, new album coming December 10th, the ideal stocking stuffer. Birthdays today, that chick from the WWE who used to be dating George Clooney, 42 today, that would be Stacey Keibler. Usher, 43. Natalie Maines from the Dixie Chicks, 47. Thomas Dolby, who has been blinded by science, is 63. Justin Hayward of the Moody Blues, 75. Ralph Lauren, the fashion designer, 82. Chuck Yeager broke the sound barrier, first time ever, 74 years ago, 1947. Finally, some good news here. 44 years ago, 1977, Bing Crosby died outside of Madrid, Spain, at the age of 73. What a son of a bitch that guy was. You know, his kids, you know, even before Bing Crosby died. This was afterwards. Talked about what a creep he was, and he was an abusive father. You know, you leave the cap off the toothpaste, and he would beat you with an inch of your life. You read these stories about Bing Crosby, it's just awful. And this is all eyewitness accounts from his own kids. He was a monster. 27 years ago today, 1994, I know where I was. I was in California interviewing the stars of the movie Exit to Eden. This would be Dan Aykroyd. It would be Rosie O'Donnell. It would be director Gary Marshall, as in Laverne and Shirley. Dan Aykroyd, by the way, in assless chaps in this movie Exit to Eden. And from Desperate Housewives, which is what she went on to do. But she was also in China Beach, actress Dana Delaney. And we're sitting there going, this is supposed to be sort of like a little dirty movie, but a nice dirty movie about this resort where people go and all this sex is going on and everything. And we're all sitting there, you know, movie critics from all over the country, a couple of hundred of us sitting there watching this movie out in California. And all of a sudden, Dana Delaney gets out of the pool absolutely naked, as in full frontal nudity. Dana Delaney, who, especially 30 years ago, holy cow. Next day, you get up and you put on a suit and you sit there and you're 3 feet away from her going, I've seen your boobies. 14 years ago today, 2007, American audiences were delighted by the premiere of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. That's your Ryan Seacrest right there. That's his project. So if you need extra reasons to not like him, there's a couple. And 27 years ago today, 1994, I remember this like it was yesterday, we saw the screening of Pulp Fiction. Now, you remember the way you felt the first time you saw Pulp Fiction? The first time. You know, like, holy shit, what is going on here? And that's how we felt. And we didn't have any warning. At least we, as movie critics, were able to tell you, you're in for a real ride here, folks. We just came in, I don't know, something called Pulp Fiction. It's some Quentin Tarantino movie. Let's see what happens. We were blown away. And here's another one of those dates, one of those events that will live in infamy. So it's 2003, and I get a call from a guy who had been so nice to me for so long. He was an executive at the brewery, and you know, I used to tell these stories on the air about my dad, who grew up in Chicago and had been going to Wrigley Field since he was a little boy. And of course, 2003, Cubs still hadn't won anything in over 100 years, but it looked like it was finally the year. So this guy, Brad Brown, how you doing, Brad, wherever you are in the great internet verse, he says, look, it looks like the Cubs are going to be able to wrap up this thing and then move on to the World Series and the game tomorrow night in Chicago. So why don't you call your dad and have him start driving down from Wisconsin, because I'm going to give you the Anheuser-Busch tickets at Wrigley Field for the game tomorrow night. It was one of the kindest gestures anybody has ever directed towards me. And I did exactly that. I called my dad. I said, get in the car, start driving to Chicago. I'll meet you. We have my sister lives in the Chicago suburbs. I'll meet you at Nancy's, and then we'll go to the game tomorrow night, sure enough. So here we have these tickets. Again, Thursday, October 14th, 2003, and we're in the ballpark, and here's a high fly ball down the left field line. What the hell is going on? His name was Steve Bartman. We were one section over. It happened right in front of us. We saw it in real time. So then they didn't know what to do, because it looked like a riot was going to break out, and the Cubs ended up losing the game, and they're trying to get Bartman out of the ballpark. They had a circle of Chicago police officers around him. They had a jacket over his head, and then they had another ring of Chicago police officers around those officers, who were batting away all the shit that people were throwing at them. And we walked right by this. We walked right by it as they were trying to get him out of the ballpark. Steve Bartman.
The category tonight, top 10 messages left on the answering machine of the Cubs fan who tried to catch the foul ball in game 7. Yeah. It was in the 8th inning, and when he went after the foul ball, the Marlins were behind 3-0. And after that moment, the Marlins went on to score 8 runs and defeated the Cubs 8-3. Top 10 messages left on the answering machine of that Cubs fan who tried to catch the foul ball in game 6. Here we go, number 10. You owe me $7.50 for the beer I threw at you. Number 9. I'm with Century 21. Heard you might be moving. Number 8. Hey, I just got back in the country. How was the game? Number 7. Don't worry, I'm sure we'll get another shot at the World Series in 2098. Number 6. This is Pete Rose. You cost me 50 G's, jackass. Number 5. Hey, it's Don Zimmer. Thanks for taking the heat off me. Number 4. Hi, this is Mike from Hasbro. I'm calling to verify some information for your Trivial Pursuit question. Number 3. Have you heard about Northfield Medical's great prices on cosmetic surgery? Number 2. Hey, it's Bill Buckner. You want to hang out? Number 1. Hi, Rush Limbaugh here. Give me a buzz if you need something to take the edge off. There you go.
There are those surreal moments in life, and that was definitely one of them. All right, we got to go. That's it. We are here every weekday morning. We publish at about 7 o'clock. If it's late, it's my fault. We thank our technical wizard, Everett Marshall, for his patience. We publish at 7 o'clock Monday through Friday. It's free. We archive everything, and you can email me at jc@jconline.com or Facebook. Follow me at the Showgram with JC Corcoran. Back tomorrow for a Friday. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The JC Corcoran Podcast.